the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. On today's episode, we welcome back to the show a good pal, Gabe Tesorero, and food director here at Bon Appetit, Carla Lolly Music. And we're talking project cookery. You know, like when you cook all weekend long one thing and you spend a week before that emailing with your friends about the right way to cook said thing. And it's like, you know, kind of like as much sport as it is cooking. And hopefully when it's all said and done, you've got something delicious to eat. So Carla, Gabe, and I, we go deep on homemade ramen, cassoulet, lasagna, and much more. All right, let's do this. Project cookery. So, Carla, can I relay a tale about Gabe here?
And, please do.
And his zeal for project cookery?
I'd love to hear it.
So, a couple of nights ago, my wife and I were on a spontaneous date. Just one of those dates like, hey, want to meet for dinner, babysitter? Yeah, cool. We're in Brooklyn at Marlowe & Sons, which is across the street from Gabe's apartment, right, Gabe?
Directly,
yes.
It's my local.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're there and you're like, oh, we should probably text Gabe and Jules. It'd be weird to not text them if we're here.
It was weird.
Yeah.
It even was weird when you texted.
So I text like, hey, Gabe, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm making pizza. So immediately Simone and I thought like, oh, well, thanks for inviting us. You're having a pizza party.
Right.
So anyways.
And I'm thinking, thanks for inviting me to Marlowe & Sons. Yeah.
When you're right already there.
But this was spontaneous date night. So we didn't even know we were going to end up there until we were literally sitting there. So after dinner, we said, oh, well, let's just do a drive-by. So knock on Gabe's door. And I'm trying to figure out, why. I wonder who he did invite to pizza night. Gabe answers the door. And there he is in his artisanal leather apron, glass of wine, by himself.
Oh.
He did pizza night by himself, four Joe Badia-style pizzas, one with Swiss chard, one with pesto, one with pepperoni, one with a plain cheese pizza, just because.
Listen, okay. There's a backstory. I don't normally do that.
You don't normally make four pizzas of like homemade dough?
There was five, actually. But I hate waste.
Right.
And there was pizza dough that was kind of sitting in my fridge for like a week, and it was, first of all, I wanted to see if it was still happening.
Yeah. Homemade dough that you
homemade
made.
Homemade dough that I made from the Joe Badia recipe, which is a revelation for home cooks out there everywhere. Need to get with the program, with the Joe Badia program. It's incredible.
The book is called Pizza Camp. We did a podcast a few weeks ago.
Fantastic. Anyway, yeah, I just didn't want to waste it. So it was sitting there. I thought I would just bake off a bunch of pizzas and like cut them up and bring them into the troops at work.
Sure.
Which I did. And and everybody was like, wow, holy shit. And I just served it like cold.
Right.
Everybody was like, this is great.
I think also it doesn't sound that weird to me because for some people, like those of us who can't play an instrument, draw, sing, or like do anything creative, cooking is that thing. So it wouldn't be so weird if Gabe went home and like listened to a bunch of music and like maybe, you know, twanged around on his guitar. So if you're just having fun cooking, great.
I put on the Grateful Dead. I put the Celtics game on mute. I poured a glass of wine and I baked a bunch of pizzas and I was in my zone. I was in my happy place.
So let's talk about it. So we're talking project cookery today. And I think that kind of gets at one thing you said, Carla, that cooking as a hobby, as opposed to just cooking as I need to get dinner on the table by 6:45 for my spouse and two kids. And there is a difference. And both of you guys indulge in project cookery when you have time. So I kind of wanted to talk about that. And Gabe, when I say that phrase, project cookery, what comes to your mind?
I mean, again, going back to our now infamous Super Bowl podcast, you know, Sundays, the game, the gang, and an all day long sort of cooking project, right? That kind of comes to mind. And some of the things that we've done over those that have started on Saturdays and the shop happens on a Friday and it's like you get into it.
Yeah, exactly. I think a project has to be at least a full day. Oftentimes, yeah, Saturday into Sunday. Like you do the prep work sort of, let the dough ferment or whatever on Saturday into the actual Sunday.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think of recipes that instead of recipes that you like make ahead as a strategy, these are recipes that by making them ahead, you actually improve the finished dish.
Yep.
So things like a roast chicken the next day is not the optimal time to have that roast chicken. But, you know, duck confit, you want it to sit overnight in its fat and get all flavor mingled up. You know, it's actually better the more time you give it.
I think another element of Project Cookery is it has to elicit from your guests, what? Wow, you made that?
Yeah.
Like, Gabe, you made homemade ramen actually from scratch?
Yep.
That's insane. And you did.
Yeah. It was actually a Super Bowl. It was a Super Bowl party, but we can talk about it in this podcast too, if that's okay with you.
So this was like, what, 3 years ago or so?
Yeah. So it was not long after the Momofuku cookbook came out and the ramen craze was in full bloom. And we kind of looked at, my buddy Rick and I kind of looked at that recipe and said, we can pull this off. And I kind of did some research for some other techniques and we just freestyled a technique that was based sort of loosely on Chang's, but with some other vibes and ideas in it. But it started with basically cooking a stock for 36 hours.
Right.
Which in and of itself, we had a sleepover, right?
Well, let's talk about the stock, because I think with ramen, especially, a lot of people think noodles, but you know, the foundation of any good ramen, if I may, is that stock.
Yeah.
And so what did that one entail? Did you do the pork?
It entailed first sourcing bones, right? So you need meaty bones, pork bones and chicken, okay, for this tonkatsu situation. So it involved sourcing bones from our local butcher, in this case, Marlo and Daughters. Shout out to Marlo and Daughters. Getting meaty bones, roasting them.
About how many pounds of meaty bones?
Several, like 3 to 5 pounds. And I mean, we were doing a big thing around.
So
right?
A couple of sheet trays of
and
bones.
Two chickens.
Two whole chickens.
Two chickens that you basically poach and you pull away the meat and then roast those bones.
Wow. And then you keep the poaching liquid?
You keep the poaching liquid for your stock, and then you roast the bones, and the roasted chicken bones go back in with the roasted pork bones. You're just roasting all the bones, putting them back in, and then you're just cooking that slowly, adding water, simmering for a long time, 36 hours.
Literally 36 hours.
Yeah, so I actually did stay over Rick's house that night and slept on the couch out by the kitchen. And just kind of like woke up in the night and fed the stock. And like, we really got into it.
This is like an army lookout where you're like, I'll take the first shift.
Yeah.
And you could sleep.
Set the alarm for 2:30 a.m.
His wife thought we were crazy. She was just like.
All right. A couple of questions. Any type of pork bones in particular that they call for?
Meaty.
Meaty, but I mean like a shin bone or ribs,
I mean, I think you can get, you know, what they've got. I think meaty rib bones are fine. I think, I don't even know if they call this in a pig, but a shank or a leg bone would be great.
Right.
What you want is for that bone to start breaking down and releasing all of its collagen and its fat and all of its goodies that will hopefully bring you some of that cloudy, almost milky vibe.
Right.
You know, if you've ever been to Ippudo or one of these better ramen spots, you'll notice that broth has this beautiful, almost milky.
Yeah. It's not consommé. Richness. This is not the French, like perfectly clear soup. It's like,
correct.
It does. It has that milky color.
It's almost dairy-like. You would think there's some dairy in there.
And there isn't. And it's really rich and really flavorful. And that requires a really long cooking time.
A couple more questions about the stock.
Yeah.
What sort of, did you put a bunch of veg in there with the bones?
Yeah. Specifically, a lot of ginger and a lot of garlic.
Yeah.
But it's going to be about the seasoning on the back end. When you're finished with that, then you have to really carefully season it.
Right.
And there's different ways of doing that.
So what do you do for that sodium umami punch? What do you add?
Well, there was in the book, there was a recipe for, I'm going to mispronounce this.
Tare.
Okay. Which is, I think, a reduced soy emulsion with shallots and different, and maybe a little bit of sesame oil, but just a very, very reduced, concentrated, you know, liquid.
Right. And I think every ramen chef, that's like another where you put your individual stamp on it, right? And these are closely guarded.
I found it difficult to make that. I didn't feel any intuitive vibes on it. Like I was looking at it and I was tasting it and it just felt like really salty.
Right.
You know, I just didn't feel like this was correct when I made it.
Right.
So moving forward, I haven't done that. I've seasoned it with a little bit of soy, a little bit of miso. These are cheats, right? But miso, you'll find miso ramens a lot.
Yeah.
A little, but careful, but really carefully, because you can over season it, and then you have a really salty mess, and you lose all of that beautiful umami.
Right.
A lot of these recipes are secretly, they're very guarded. A lot of the stuff that you find online is people trying to dissect it
and emulate it.
And what I found was a bunch of people using little carefully bits of sesame paste.
Oh.
Japanese sesame paste. In a pinch, you could use tahini. This, I'm sure ramen purists out there are going to be screaming when they hear this. But
if you want to email us, bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to yell at Gabe, we will pass on
you
the email.
You can add an element of depth and richness, and also that kind of rich, that sort of rich milkiness, mm-hmm. with just a very carefully doling out the sort of the miso and the a little bit of sesame paste. And don't forget kombu.
Don't ever forget kombu.
Very important. But don't leave the kombu in there for too long.
Right.
It's got to go in and you got to pull it out.
That's right.
And kombu is dried seaweed for those listening at home.
Yep.
That brings up a big thing, Carl. Maybe you're probably good at this. I'm not good at this. When you embark on a project,
mm-hmm.
you need that shopping list tight. Because always go get everything, I'm ready to go, and I'm like, oh shit, I forgot the so-and-so.
Inevitably, you know? That's going to happen, which is why you touched on this in a fleeting way, but this project was, you had a partner, yep. right? You were doing this as a team, which I think is some of the funnest Ooh. Cooking projects, is like having a buddy, splitting up the work, making it a joint thing, because you're, you know, it's a project. You're going to have like a huge amount of whatever it is you're making. Maybe it's five pizzas, or maybe it's like a giant tub of ramen.
You don't need a partner for five pizzas, apparently.
Well, he needed an office to share it with, right?
That's true. But it's nice. You can say, hey, can you run out and get some so-and-so? And right. Like, yeah, sure. And I'll grab a six-pack while I'm there. And,
yeah.
All right. So you got a big stock pot of like milky, salty, umami-rich broth. About yep. how much stock ultimately did that make? Do you know about?
I don't know. I want to say like we had 2 gallons or something.
Yeah. All right. So you got this the broth, the foundation for a good ramen. Now you need the noodles.
I haven't made the noodles. I have to be honest with you.
That's fine.
Especially here in New York, we've got access to really great noodles, noodles that restaurants use.
Right.
You know, we use Sun noodles. Yeah. We can get them pretty easily.
But I think most of Sun Noodles based in Jersey.
Yep.
But most people can mail order. Can you mail order Sun now? I mean, a lot of places now.
They're
I think
more
you can
and
mail.
Available.
I mean, yes. I'm comfortable saying at this point you can mail order anything.
Yes.
So I feel good about that. But the Sun Noodles are nationally available in Whole Foods.
Yeah, yep. And they're fresh.
And
they're not fresh. They're not dry.
No, they're great. I have a couple in my freezer right now.
They actually now make an instant product as well. That comes with a flavor packet,
yes.
and you can make your own tonkatsu ramen. And it's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
In a pinch, yeah. Okay, so you buy the noodles, you've got the stock.
Yep.
But then you need to make more meat to actually...
You want to finish it with some beautiful sort of toppings, or, you know, you want to finish it with some beautiful meat. You can do pork belly.
That's when you get like the slices of the pork belly in the bowl.
You can really slow roast some pork belly and make it, you know, just melty and delicious.
It's an adjunct project that's part of this project.
Yeah, that's just like an 8-hour project.
Yeah.
that's not a 36-hour.
It's pretty hands-off.
Yeah, it's like file and forget. Put a piece of pork belly into the oven at 250 or something for 6 hours, and it's like becomes beautiful.
And so I remember at the Super Bowl, this was like probably 4 or 5 years ago. And so you had the stock, you had the fresh noodles that you don't cook the noodles in the stock. You cook the noodles.
A la minute. That it happens right there.
Yes.
Pot of boiling water. You have your, what do you call this tool?
A ladle.
No, like a spider.
A spider. Oh. Thank you. You have your spider for your noodles. Very important. Everybody needs to have a spider at home.
Everybody
those
should
are
have
those
a spider.
Little mesh baskets that you see in
Absolutely.
Asian restaurants.
A lot
bamboo
of times,
handles.
Bamboo handle.
Love them. Best things
There's
ever.
There's fancy ones now, but you don't need to go there.
So, and then
and then I have all of my sort of my toppings, my mise en place is there.
Such as
sesame seeds, scallions, bamboo. You want to get the pickled bamboo, which is called menma, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Love that stuff.
You want to have that stuff. You can have some daikon, some carrots, like really finely julienned. Very important, the 6.5-minute egg.
That's right.
A delicate process in and of itself, easy to mess up, but when you get it right, the result is incredible.
Yeah, so you had this whole accoutrement, then you asked people to sort of assemble it themselves, kind of like a ramen bar.
Yeah, I'm not doing that anymore. No one's choosing.
Oh, you're assembling?
Yeah.
Oh, the chef.
Because people
the chef,
do,
the chef
people
decides.
Do it wrong. People do it wrong.
That's like when the waiter goes, the chef prefers
medium rare. It should be composed. The thing about ramen is it is a chef's sort of presentation.
Yeah.
And it should be composed.
Yeah.
I agree. Compose the bowl. I like to put my little toppings in little piles on top of the bowl and make them colorful and kind of make it beautiful and present a beautiful bowl of ramen.
Do you have those
people.
Like white curtains now in your kitchen? You like peer out and the steam comes through.
Yeah, I do wear a headband.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah, I do tie a kerchief around my head.
Gabe is known to get a little schwitzy in the kitchen. It's good to wear that. I will say this, honestly, at that presentation inspired me to then assign a piece on homemade ramen in the magazine.
Correct.
Which the Test Kitchen executed, and it showed up in the September 2013 restaurant issue. You can find it online, I imagine, right?
Oh, for sure.
Bonappetit.com.
100%.
But it's everything from the bones to the broth to the, you know, the accoutrement to the noodles.
And
you
we kept it real. It was like, this takes a long time.
Yeah.
Do not attempt if you don't think that it's going to take a long time, because it is.
It's not going to be as good, but you can freestyle ramen on the fly and cheat your way through it and make it into a 3-hour project if you want to. You're not going to have that same result, but you can take some, if you can get some good chicken stock, you can roast some pork bones, hit them in some stock and throw some alliums and different stuff in there and kind of freestyle and fake a ramen stock. That's not what we're talking about today, but if you are daunted by that, you can still make something satisfying and delicious.
But I think
it's soup after all.
I think that's what's interesting about Project Cookery is that you can still make a delicious meal in a lot less time. But Project Cookery is about the journey. It's like, I'm gonna spend 36 hours to make this milky porky broth.
Yeah, and I mean, it's fun. It's for those of us that like it, it's really fun.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness, really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Carla, we've got a piece in the magazine coming up at some point about Castlelake, correct?
We chef.
And you...
Well, this story has the story of this dish is a sad story that has very happy ending.
Oh, okay.
Because
good.
when the Castlelake project was
it's like a Disney movie.
Kinda.
Yeah.
When the Castlelake recipe was originally pitched and assigned, it was also for the project section of the magazine, which is where the ramen recipe ran. And the great Claire Saffitz was assigned this recipe. She loves French everything. She developed it, executed it, wrote it. It was slated for print.
I have a feeling this is going to be insulting to me.
No, not at all. Okay. At the last minute, Adam Rappaport was like, you know what? This is just one click too far. Because not only is it a super project with a lot of time and a lot of labor and a lot of love going into it, you also need to get the tarbe beans. You need to get the special garlic sausage. And you need the, you know, now you're like ordering stuff. And it was...
Well, the problem was...
And it was like a barrier to making it that was... It was like a... Going to inhibit people.
Yeah. And Claire is such a purist that she insisted on the tarbe beans and the French garlic sausage, which those products are not easy to source in the way that ramen noodles are now.
You know, right.
And there was an issue about, well, can you get this? And there wasn't a sub. So Let's cut to the happy ending.
So, I mean, whatever, then that was a decision that was made, and it was, you know, there were some crestfallen people, but the happy side of the story.
It's my job to make people.
Did a great job. So in the intervening, I think, 2 or 3 years, the internet has changed quite a bit, and thank God Claire is still with us. And for whatever reason, Claire decided to make it herself. So, and we talk all day long in the test kitchen. So
she wouldn't let the dream die.
3 or 4 months ago, she was like, you know what? You know, F it. Like, that's a good recipe. I'm making it. So she made it over the weekend. She came in on Monday morning and she was like, you know that cassoulet? Like, I'm proud of that. That was a long time ago and it's really good. And I was like, oh, I want to make your cassoulet. So then we started talking about it again. And in the time, Claire is like, much smarter now, I think, about the strategies, and did have the subs. And she also made it at home, which I think was part of the revelation of like, huh, what is really, truly necessary here? You know, as opposed to when she developed it, she was working in the test kitchen physically. So she made it. She was psyched about it. I was like, oh, that's funny. I'm coming up on I have a weekend cooking, like hang family gang get together with some friends who really like to cook. I was like, I'm gonna get cassoulet in the mix here. So I decided that would be great. And then my friends who love to cook wanted something like that that took 2 or 3 days. So that's how we landed on it. But it does require like making duck confit. It has all of these different elements that you have to prepare.
For those who haven't made cassoulet, which is pretty much everyone.
Some of us have never even tasted cassoulet.
I had never.
It's like a unicorn.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's like Snuffleupagus. Right. It's like you've heard of it.
But nobody's actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like unless you, I don't know.
So break it down.
Okay.
Like, what are the components and the components add up to what?
Got it. Okay, the components add up to like something that will sustain you through the dark winter months of like plowing the fields of your French farm. So that's good.
That's the irony that it was originally this super hearty dish that when people would work 12 hours a day outside.
Right, and like they could handle it.
Yeah.
So a few elements that you need. You need duck confit, right, which we've talked about, and great. We have a great method, and Claire uses our easy duck confit method to make this one.
And that's
fantastic.
That's just duck legs cooked in their own fat to their fall off the bone and crispy.
Correct.
And the best
with some
ever.
Aromatics in there. But in the original recipe, she was calling for purchasing duck fat. And now, in our more enlightened years later, we don't do that anymore. So that's great. So that's like a set it and forget it. But you got to get the duck legs, and you got to give them some time, and you have to have a free oven. Then you also have to make the beans, right? These beautiful white beans. And Tarbes beans are the original, and they're exquisite. They have this incredibly thin skin, but they don't crack open. They're super creamy. They never get mushy. They never fall apart. They're like the perfect bean. But
I have a question. Raise
Adam's
my hand.
Hand is up in the air.
How do you prepare them so they don't crack and fall apart?
They have that inherent quality in them as a bean, of a perfect bean.
Do you soak them overnight?
You definitely soak them overnight. You drain them. When I did this most recently, can you guess what I'm going to say now?
No.
I use a pressure cooker.
Oh,
but,
God.
You know, that's what I do.
Just like you, Adam, they're really thin skin and yummy inside.
what sort of aromatics? Just like an onion and some carrots or something in there?
Carrots, yeah, garlic, you know, throw a hunk of pancetta in there if you got it.
Why
or
not?
Some bacon nub or whatever. And then a pound of sausage. Ideally, so now in the revised recipe, ideally garlic sausage. So a nod to, you know, authenticity. It's important, but sweet Italian is fine. We decided that this sausage in the beans is optional. I really don't think you need it.
Oh, the sausage. You're saying it goes
in with the beans.
Huh. Okay.
And it's a flavoring agent, delicious.
Yeah,
but
all right.
Like,
oh, so this isn't even the starring sausage. This is just like backup sausage.
Yeah, that's right.
That's crazy.
I know. And we both decided, like, you know what? There's already pancetta. There's already pork product. You got the duck legs, and you've got this like pork ragu. Also, like that sausage maybe.
Okay.
So fine. So you cook the beans.
You said pork ragu.
Yeah. Then there's
a
pork ragu.
Yeah, we're not there yet. See, I didn't know about the pork ragu. I was always like,
oh, yeah.
Beans, sausage, confit. But there's a whole pork ragu.
There's
thing
a whole
going
pork
on.
Ragu, and not only that, then for the assembly, you've got to make these amazing breadcrumbs, and then that's when the Toulouse sausage gets in the mix. So,
what's a Toulouse? Is a Toulouse sausage
like
comparable
this,
to an Italian
no,
sausage?
No, it's like a fat, really
oh,
fat.
Oh yes,
yeah.
The fat one that almost looks like a wurst or something.
But you can use kielbasa there.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
And you slice those crosswise.
Yeah. And it goes in And then, so then the magic happens, right? So I made the duck confit on Friday in my home. I soaked the beans and got the ingredients for the beans. Meanwhile, he bought all the stuff for the pork ragu and had that ready. My husband was on cheese. Somebody else was bringing bread. You know, we had wine. Everybody was tasked with wine. Then there was like a whole side conversation about like, what's the right side dish? And I was like, well.
Can someone email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com and tell me what is the proper like Southwest French wine? I assume.
Right. From, to drink
with Cassoulet. It is a Southwest France, right?
Yeah.
Gascony sort of region ish. Where the ducks are.
So, you know, then you like show up at someone's house with like the pan of duck legs and, you know, stock and the beans. And it was really fun. So then we got over to his place and used every pot and pan in his house. And then you've got all these helpers around doing dishes and pouring wine. And
so what did you assemble it in? And,
right.
And is there a science to what goes in first or layering?
You definitely layer, but it's kind of like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know if it matters what goes first. So I'm sure
duck
Claire
leg, beans,
has
sausage,
decided.
Duck leg, beans, sausage.
Yeah.
Ragu all over.
Yeah, exactly.
And what?
Well, eventually the beans and ragu get combined, and then you want those
in a big like Dutch oven kind of situation.
Yeah, right? But even ahead of time, like once you've made the ragu and you have your cooked beans, you like mix them together, and then you could just put that into the fridge and come back 2 days later. You know what I mean?
Yep. And even better as the flavors marry.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like a dish that actually gets better the longer you leave it alone. Because there's something, and we've been talking about this, there's a magical alchemy that happens when the flavors get to hang out together. Even the individual things, the pork ragu and the beans are having their party for 2 hours, and then the cassoulet itself, you can assemble and then not even cook it till the next day. And even what happens to it when it's like not even cooked, but they're just all hanging out together.
But it goes into a large,
it does.
Like and Le Creuset kind of situation. So, and then it goes in the oven.
Yeah. So the original vessel for this was a cassoule, which I'm sure I'm mispronouncing, but like an earthenware, you know, big thing with not such high sides, but high enough.
And that was kind of, it's more like one of those sort of orange terracotta colored sort of deals.
Like a cazuela, I guess, is similar. People don't have those. You can order those online for sure. But my friend John had this big, like deep paella pan.
Oh, so you did it in one vessel.
We did. We did it in one vessel. And this was maybe a little bit wider and shallower than the ideal situation, but then that was fine because it didn't take as long to cook.
How do you know how long to cook it for so it doesn't dry out? And do you feed it with liquid while it's cooking?
You don't feed it with liquid, but you do. So you put this layer of breadcrumbs on top. And then while it's cooking and all the duck fat and the pork fat is like burbling up to the surface, you open it up and you crack the cassoulet. This is like one of these things that you have to do and it makes it real. And you kind of break up the breadcrumbs and you push them down into that top layer of fat. And then you put them back in the oven so that they just keep toasting and fattening and crispying up together. And then you open it up again and you break that up again and smoosh it down and then fat and heat then bread happens. Holy it's cow. Amazing.
So how do
and
you...
so if you don't get like that's the thing about a deep vessel, you know, there's sort of there's pros and cons because with something very deep, you want everybody to have a nice piece of those toasty, fatty breadcrumbs.
But only the top layer gets it.
So you're like going straight down and you want to make sure. It's kind of like a very deep cobbler where you're like, I only got fruit and not a biscuit.
And
so
then what's the point?
So Claire, we're working on like maybe having a sidecar of breadcrumbs that you can add in case it's not looking like the right ratio.
Yeah, I like the notion of a wider, more shallow one where there's like a maybe single layers of sausage, duck, beans, and then the breadcrumbs. But if you do that, you do have to.
Gabe's face right now.
Just, I know.
It just sounds delicious.
It was great.
I've never had cassoulet. I've never had it.
What?
I said it's the unicorn.
You're going to make this.
Did you serve it with like a frise salad or what did you serve
with? We did like a big escarole, like nice, acidic, mustardy.
Bracing.
Yes. I think we also had roast fennel because like somebody like, whatever, just put it in the oven. So we had kids cutting things. I mean, it was fun.
So my question though is, as it's in the oven, the one thing I would be worried about was like, oh, I don't want to leave it in there too long because what if it dries out and loses its moistness? No. And how do you know?
That is like literally impossible.
So
you have
fat.
A pork ragu, you have duck confit, you have chicken stock, you've got these delicious beans. It's not going to happen. It cooks for 3 hours. And then the breadcrumb layer is sort of acting like a sealant, you know? It's like holding everything down.
Were there leftovers?
There were leftovers, and everybody got to take some home. And I also, this is one of those things you're like, oh my God, it's so rich, it's so delicious, so amazing. Everyone had seconds.
Yeah. Wow.
It was like weird almost. But the flavor, they made a new flavor together. They made a flavor you had never had.
It's like the Avengers. They're all awesome on their own, but when they come together, they're even more awesome.
That's right. It's like chemistry of flavor. It was mind-boggling because I don't think I had ever had cassoulet either.
It certainly sounds incredible.
And then, so everybody got leftovers, and I brought my little Tupperware home, and I'm like, you know, swaying drunk at this point. But we're all happy. It's good. And we felt like, you know, fortified. We're going to like fight on the next day.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to refrigerate the leftovers because I was like, I don't want the fat to congeal. Yeah. I don't think that the French farmhouse woman had a refrigerator. I'm pretty sure it's all cooked. It's fine. So I didn't. And I felt really good about that decision.
They also didn't have heat in their houses.
Well, they had a fire.
Yes.
So at least. Ish. And the next morning I had it for breakfast.
Oh my God.
And Carla, I was like,
did you put a fried egg on top?
I surprised myself. I was like, you're not really doing it. So you're doing it. Oh, I'm doing it. And it was it might have been even better. And then
how did you heat it up or what?
No. This is standing at the counter with a spoon.
Oh my God.
I think I was in a row. I'm probably in my bathroom. God.
Incredible.
And then my 13-year-old son came down and I was like, dude, treat yourself. And he was like, oh, it was so good. It was so good.
Oh. Wow.
Mom in her slippers and robe just mowing.
I was like, even better. It got even better. How is that even possible?
So everyone, it was a agreed upon hit by all.
Because then there were like six more emails the next 2 days about like,
I can't believe
the great time we had, and the bread was great, and the this, and what was that other recipe?
We're doing it.
Yeah, done.
We're doing it.
Do you ever go back in the day, that old classic French restaurant on 55th Street, La Côte Basque, which is no longer in existence?
Yeah, I never had the privilege of eating there.
They would do
LCB,
Jean-Jacques Rousseau, I believe the chef's name was, back in the 80s and 90s and stuff, and they would do a tableside cassoulet, and they would bring the big thing around, and it was really nice. The waiter would very carefully make sure to sort of spoon out equal portions of every element, and then you get a dab of Dijon on the side of the plate. It was quite nice, and that's, I kind of love that almost most. I know we're digressing here,
I wouldn't
but
put Dijon with it. It was just like,
you might, for if you get your coin of sausage, you might
hit it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Dijon to the side. You know, it's not in there. Yeah, just a dab.
But
I kind of love that the most, and I'm digressing. When you go to a really nice restaurant and get something really rustic, and you're like, ooh, this is a beautiful glass of wine and the nice salad and the beautiful like cutlery and plates, but it's like you're eating cassoulet.
Right.
So, all right, I'm not a big project guy because I'm impatient. And I just like, I don't have time, and is it worth it? And I'm too neurotic.
There's a lot of, is it worth it?
Well, and that's my whole thing. That's my job as editor all the time.
I'll say this. As somebody who's been over to Adam's place for dinner, has been so blessed to be over at Adam's place for dinner a bunch of times. Every time you show up, it looks like nothing's happening and nothing's going to happen. You know, oftentimes he will come to the door, just hopped out of the shower, hair still wet, mixing himself a martini, and you just don't see any action in the kitchen at all.
That's because I've already done the mise en place.
It just doesn't look like anything's going to happen. He's so laissez-faire about the entire thing. And it's good. It's a good vibe. It's not tense.
Right.
It's like, come in. There's like a little crudite.
What did we make?
There's like a situation. We're having a nice, maybe eat nice olives. We're having a nice cocktail.
When you and Jules came over a couple months ago, what did we make?
You made pork chops.
Oh, those were really good. Yeah,
people love pork chops.
It's like, what's for dinner? Pork chops. You know, it's like I came over here for pork chops, but it was extraordinary. He got some great meat, cooked them hot and fast and quick, and served it with a bright salad. And we couldn't believe how good it was.
Yeah,
it was.
They were beautiful.
You are
pork
a really
chops,
good cook, Adam.
Pan roasted.
And you make it look really easy. And I appreciate that because I literally have to bring the drama.
Right.
Every single
but
time.
But you're a dramatic guy.
Yeah. I just.
What
I
was the side?
It's got to be a show.
Yeah.
It's got to be like.
I like it.
What was thing?
What well, was if you're the, wearing a headband, you have to like earn that. You
yeah,
know
if
what
I'm
I mean?
Wearing a leather apron and a headband. It's got to go off.
What was the starch? We had like, so it was like a salad, pork chops, and there was something else. Or something.
Just some like white rice or something.
Oh, no, no. I made the creamy, cheesy polenta. Soft polenta. Really again. Soft. So it like pools on a plate like pudding.
I mean, some of us are polenta guys. Others of us really aren't. But again, delicious.
You know how I make polenta?
Mm-mm.
Wait for it.
Yeah.
Pressure cooker.
Oh, God. You in the pressure cooker.
All right. 9 minutes.
Two projects I do embark on. One is your fast and easy confit, which is comfy duck legs, which apparently is not even a project because it's just 1/5 of a project, I just learned. And what's great about this, and we've talked about this on the cast before, is that you don't have to go out and buy a quart of duck fat. You just take the duck legs that you buy from a butcher or like D'Artagnan, you layer them in a pot with some seasonings and slowly cook them, and they render so much fat after an hour and a, so they're submerged in their own fat.
Correct.
And then they just continue to sort of braise in their fat, and at the end you heat them up in the oven and they get super crispy and they're fall apart tender, and that is one of the best things
I would say they're easy. They're not necessarily fast because that does take about 3.5 hours.
Yeah, it's fine. But, you're,
but it's
it gives
fine.
You like an almost carnitas-y vibe.
Yes,
when,
exactly.
When it comes out.
And
you,
what
you
and,
start them skin side down and you poke them in a few places and just the low heat so they start rendering the fats down. Da da. And then at a certain point, there's enough fat in there. You just flip them over. They keep going shreddy. Delicious.
And you make, which is interesting, which most people think they're not going to like, and it's the recipe is duck confit with spicy pickled raisins. And most people are like, pickled raisins? What? And there's something about that sweet, spicy pickledness on the fatty crispiness where you're like, oh, now I get it.
And the sour. I mean, that pickle, you need that sourness. It's a little like the, why the mustard was there for that. But, you know, you could also buy a jar of like mustarda, you know, and have... That's
some,
like
you
a,
just want something a little.
Yeah, you want
some
something
bite.
With some sharpness.
So the other project that I embark upon, that's also a Bon Appetit recipe, is our best ever lasagna bolognese, and the recipe calls for homemade making your own pasta.
Right.
I think that's bananas. I'm not going to make sheets of my own pasta.
That's fine. You can buy them,
and you can buy if you have like a good Italian market near you. Oftentimes, or any wherever or whatever gourmet store that nonsense, you can often buy fresh.
Sheets
of lasagna, and that's nothing, Gabe. Like, as you said before, it's okay to take shortcuts. Like not everything has to be homemade. If you can go buy good sheets of pasta, that's fine. They're probably better than what you're gonna make.
What is the deal with no boil lasagna sheets?
No.
What is
I reject.
The deal?
They're engineered. They're par cooked basically, and then dried so that you just.
I just
but
instinctively
I feel,
want to stay away from that.
I've tried them, and I find that they just absorb too much of the liquid because they need the liquid to finish their cooking.
Right.
So then, if you don't have a very very saucy loose kind of tomato sauce, it's going to get tight, and it's not so fun.
All right, so you're making. A bolognese, which is your ground meat. Oftentimes, it's a mixture of veal, pork, and beef, and you got the little mirepoix going. Mm-hmm. You mix that together. You've got a little wine going in there. Do we call for, chicken broth? Do we and some whole milk.
Tomato
paste.
Yeah, paste.
I like what this recipe calls for. I like the paste. I don't like, but this calls for crushed tomatoes. See, I do a recipe. I don't like crushed tomatoes in my bolognese. I just like tomato paste.
Yeah.
And the wine and the chicken stock. But that's up to you. So you got that going. Then you make a bechamel.
Yep.
Which is essentially just...
A white sauce.
Yeah. So you got some butter.
Flour, milk, usually nutmeg,
little chicken
pepper.
Broth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you got your sheets. And then you start assembling. You do layers of a little sauce on the bottom so the bottom doesn't stick. Then sheet of pasta. You do bechamel, you do bolognese, Parmesan cheese, and the key for a good lasagna is to layer and layer and layer. You want like seven layers.
Yeah.
You want like seven layers, and not any one layer is too thick.
Right.
Adam, did you ever have Mark Ladner's like
million layer
lasagna?
I have at Del
it's
Posto.
It's just unbelievable. Like you never had anything like that before.
That is remarkable.
But this recipe, gives you that same layering vibe.
Yeah, people cook this recipe. People are surprised to learn that lasagna can actually be very light.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't be this like super heavy, but I mean in the sense of like not a super heavy brick of
lighter than you
noodle,
would think.
Yeah. Like with a casserole and then a noodle.
I will
on
say
top.
This about fresh pasta. If you go to a really good Italian restaurant, like when Mark Ladner was at Del Posto, his fresh pasta was phenomenal, and it was feathery thin and silky, and he could literally get like 20 layers into this cube. And a couple other things. So what I like about making lasagna as a project, you know it's going to be good.
Right.
And you know that everyone's going to love it.
Yep.
I've got bolognese and Parmesan cheese and pasta. There's no way this isn't going to be good. The one thing that you really have to be mindful of, one thing is check the seasoning, make sure everything is properly salted, and taste as you go. I think that's for any project, because you talked about Gabe making the broth.
Don't dry it out, man.
Yeah, don't dry it out. But with that pasta that Ladner would make at Del Posto, also I think the most inspirational pasta lasagna ever had was, getting back to Mario Batali, Mark's old boss, at Babbo, every now and then he would do a duck ragu lasagna.
Wow.
With multiple layers and this creamy duck sort of confit ragu in it. And both of those lasagnas, they're not served hot.
Mm.
I mean, they're warm, but you have, after you make the lasagna, it's bubbling hot, you've got to let it sit for like an hour.
It has to set up.
It has to set up. It has to come back together. Like we've all had the lasagna that's not so good where someone cuts it and it just oozes and slides all over the place. And like, you want that cube on your plate, and
it
should
some
hold
integrity.
Together. And I would say, I mean, literally, I think like an hour. So it should be served warm and not hot, and it gets better that way.
I agree.
So yeah, I did that. The last time I did that, however, our mutual friends Gabe, Michael, and Cheryl were having an Oscar party at their apartment, and it's kind of like a potluck, and a lot of people bring good food. And a year before, I brought a lasagna, and it was a big hit, and then someone showed up with Korean fried chicken wings at the end of the and I ate 20 of those, even though I'd already eaten like two pieces of lasagna. And so I'm like, I'm going to run it back. I'm bringing lasagna again, because everyone's like, I hope Adams makes lasagna this year.
What Adam didn't mention at the top of this podcast was when he and Simone like popped up after their dinner.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, feverishly making five pizzas. Adam ate like 10 slices of pizza immediately after his big
Marlon
dinner.
Son.
Well, this was one
he
of
was
those,
like, hey, let me try one. Let me try another. What's this one?
First of all, it literally was five slices, not 10. But it was one of those things, you go to dinner, you're like, oh, why don't we just split the chicken under the brick, honey? And like, we'll split some oysters. And it was a very sensible dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Gabe's, and so much for the sensibility. But last year at the Oscars, I made this beautiful lasagna, spent all afternoon making it. And then I got hit with like a sick wave, and I started feeling nauseous, and I was like head coldy.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I can't go. And I'm like, honey, you're going to have to take this. It's like sending your kid to college.
And she did.
And she did. And everyone ate it, and I didn't get any.
I'm so sorry. You know, did she get the applause though?
But you know what? It's about the journey. So the process, the project was rewarding enough.
Can I tell you a funny story about lasagna bolognese? Invited over to a friend's house for dinner this many years ago, many, many years. And they were like, let's do potluck. They had just had a baby. I was like, wow, you guys really want to have a dinner? They're like, well, we'll do a potluck and everybody can bring something. I was like, oh, I'm totally down. Yeah, whatever. And they were like, great. Can you bring lasagna bolognese?
Oh, wow. You're like, thanks.
And I was like, I can. And I just remember.
I was thinking like a salad.
Yeah. But they probably didn't know what it entailed to make a good
lasagna
bolognese.
They were just like, we love lasagna bolognese.
And like, I'm sure you do.
Cool. So, of course, I like looked up, you know, a super authentic recipe. I don't think I made my own pasta, but bought. And it was, I just remember being half an hour late to be at their house.
You did like the Marcella Hazan.
Like, I was still layering. There was bechamel everywhere. I mean, it was insane. And they were like, this is amazing. And I was like, I'm never coming over here again.
All right, Carlisle Music. Gabe Tesserero.
Hey.
Hey, I got it mostly right.
All right.
Thanks for coming, guys.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Emma Wertzman and Carrie Polis and edited by Mitra Kaboli. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Gradys, with additional music by Nathaniel Wertzman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.